And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper.
Getting close to the holidays, Bonnie.
It is. Very. It already is.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's been since, I think, July. Anyway, it's food and dining time now with chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. It's time now for a discussion of the many features of Israeli culture, and especially its food, wines, and even its agriculture. Linda, you recently just visited Israel, did you not?
Yes, I did. Hi, Bonnie. Hi, Joe.
Hi,
nice
Linda.
Nice to be with you. You know, I attended the International Women's Forum conference in Tel Aviv last May. And before I went, I contacted Lynn Arison for some travel information. Now, she's the co-founder of the New World Symphony, and she divides her time between Israel and Miami. And when I contacted her, I was delighted to find out that she and her co-author, Diana Stahl, we're working on a book about Israel, and it's called The Desert and the Cities Sing, Discovering Today's Israel. It's really, I find, it's a look at Israel beyond the headlines. It's what's really happening in Israel now. And they're both here today to tell us about the wine and the culture of Israel and the food. Welcome, Lynn Arison.
Hi, very glad to be here.
Great to have you. And welcome, Diana Stahl.
Hi, Linda. Glad to be here, too. Thanks.
Great to have you. And, of course, we'd love to have you, our listeners, join us. Do you have any questions or comments about Israel?
800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email. That's radio@WLRN.org. This is quite a book. I'm going to have to help Bonnie get it down to her car.
I think in order to, yes, when you get this book, you're going to need your little personal valet to carry it for you.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Let's talk about, well, first let's say hello to Fred, and then we're going to explain what we're talking about. Our favorite wine guide, Fred Tasker, is joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine suggestions from my Dinner in Minutes columns. That's in the Miami Herald. And you can also read his wine column. That's in Saturday's Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, first, hi, Lynn. Good to hear from you. And second, I am the wine wonk, so I guess I'll be talking about Israeli wine.
What are you drinking?
Wine wonk, did you say?
Wine wonk. That's me.
Okay. Lynn is sitting here laughing at you. Okay, Lynn Arison, first of all, congratulations on this amazing book. You call it a treasure box. And can you explain what this is? It's the size of a briefcase.
Well, this is true. It is the size of a briefcase because there's so many little things in it. And what you can do is once you open it up, you take all the little things out and put them in your backpack when you're traveling.
And learn about it. So little things being, there's
four small little books. And then there's four DVDs. And there's a map.
A map of Israel that you would never know before. Something you can't find anywhere else.
You can't find anywhere else because it's got places that we went to that have never been on the map.
A wonderful, wonderful travel guide kind of map if you're going there. And also, Diane and I are both wearing these wonderful scarves. I mean, there's even this scarf. Why was there a scarf? It's like velvet. It's so why is there a scarf in the book?
Well,
in the treasure box?
That's because we couldn't put wine in there.
Oh, Fred, I'm sorry.
We thought about offering a bottle of wine. We realized we'd get into trouble, but we wanted to give people something to touch and wear and just feel.
So it's an Israeli artist who designed this scarf, which is so
now lovely. Is Lynn wearing one also?
No.
I was going to take the one out of the box and put it on instead of this.
Ah,
this
okay.
is a plain old scarf.
I took it instead.
I see.
Now, you said there are four books. There are four major themes in those books. So what are they?
There's innovations. There's eat, sleep, and play. And then there's agriculture, which is an amazing thing because there's solutions from the land.
We're going to get to that in a minute. But first, with you, I'd like to say that you steered me in the right direction when I went to Israel about eating. So tell me, how is the cuisine in Israel developed?
Well, because there's so many different kinds of countries that are coming into Israel, and so they bring their their food with them so that there's everything from soup to nuts.
Literally.
Literally.
Yes, it's a great kind of cross-section of, you know, people who have come in from Central Europe and, you know, southern Spain, and there they are in this beautiful territory that's right on the Mediterranean and provides so much great produce. The food is just incredible there, and it has the advantage of being kind of a hybrid of lots of different cuisines. So Israel is coming up with its own culinary ideas.
Right. I was surprised because there is. I mean, there's fine French dining, there's Italian, but there's also Israeli. There's also Israeli dining, and the food is so fresh, wonderful fresh.
That's it, fresh, because it comes right out of the ground and onto the table.
That's such an interesting concept, though. I never stopped to think about it, how Israeli food would be so different from the other, perhaps, Middle Eastern countries because of the amalgam of
people coming through.
Of people coming through.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a great thing for any cuisine, I think, actually, that you can kind of, if chefs are creative, they take elements from wherever they can get them. So it goes way beyond hummus, let's say.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it sure does.
And falafel.
And we're talking about the freshness and all, and here they're growing this in the desert. And so, Diana, we were talking earlier before the show. I was amazed at one of the books talks about the agricultural methods, the drip irrigation, and something called biochar. Can you give us an explanation of what these are?
Sure. One of the most amazing things to see in Israel is crops growing in the desert. So the Israelis really have been amazingly active in coming up with ways to make things grow. Biochar is one of them. We met with a wonderful Israeli scientist called Ellen Graber from the Volcani Center. It's an agricultural institute. Biochar is a couple of things. It's a method of replenishing soil with carbon, which makes it very rich and fertile. And maybe just as importantly, it also has the potential to help the process of climate change.
This was fascinating. I was reading about it. I was trying to absorb what this is. It takes the carbon out of the air.
Yes, exactly.
And it actually cleans the air.
It does. And it transfers the carbon to the ground where it can do some good, and it holds it there. So all the carbon that we've been pouring into the air, I mean, this is all still potential. Ellen Graber says it's not necessarily a magic bullet, but it seems to be having some great effects. So Lynn and I both kind of studied biochar and found it to be a very interesting move forward for agriculture.
Amazing. And when I was there, I was amazed by the technology and all the innovation that's going on there. One more thing. We're going to get back to the food in a minute because I want to get back to it. But I want to also go on to this drip irrigation system. Tell us about that.
Sure. We had the opportunity to meet with Nati Barak, who's the head of a company called Netafim, which was one of the first companies, and started on a kibbutz, actually, the first places where drip irrigation was kind of put into place. It's obviously, for a country that's two-thirds desert, it's been a vital, vital thing to be able to mete out water very, very carefully through dripping water through pipes. The Israelis have been super successful with it. Netafim is still going strong after 30 or 40 years, I guess. And the Israelis also have taken this technology to other countries that are, you know, arid and have trouble growing. So it's been a great kind of thing
spreading out.
It's not
only just the drip, because I happened to, when I was in Israel, we mentioned earlier in the program that I was there at a conference, and I met Rafi, the man who invented this, has the patent on it. They can determine through computerization how much water the soil actually needs. So it's not just, Lynn, go ahead and tell us a little more about it. Do you know, did you have something to say?
Yes, and it has a meter where it gives out what's needed.
Just exactly. And here you have this country that could barely feed itself. Not only does it feed itself because of this irrigation system, but it sends food all over the world.
Yeah, they're exporting crops. It's amazing.
And therefore, as we said earlier, Lynn, they have wonderful food.
Wonderful food that where it comes straight out of the earth and onto the table. It's delicious.
So when you say farm to table,
farm
you mean
to table,
farm
I
to
mean
table.
Yeah.
Well, now, you told me, Lynn Arison, that it took you, and again, we're talking about this treasure box, and we haven't even, it took you 7 years to put this together, because not only does it have the four books that you talked about, but it has, and one is going to talk, we're going to talk about wine later on with Fred, but it's got this big portfolio of photos in it. Now, tell us about that.
Well, Neil Folberg has been a photographer that I've worked with on all my books, and he is awesome when it comes to depicting the beauty of Israel. And so outside of the box are his photos, and inside the portfolio are 25 more of his photos, and they're frameable.
Yes, the quality is terrific.
And you'd be surprised how many people in Miami have them up on their walls.
And all over the place.
And all over the place. But it's so funny, in the beauty shop, there's a lot of Latin beauticians and manicurists and all, and they've framed them and up on the wall. So Israel's on the wall of Miami.
Now, so did you go over there and research, or how did this happen?
Well, no, you just send Neil.
You mean for the project in general?
For the project in general, yes.
Well, for the project in general, we researched every inch that we reported on. So if we've seen it and we write about it, it's what we've experienced.
And so we don't think in terms of artisan foods, like bakeries and all in Israel. But tell us about it, because you know there's a...
Beautiful bakeries. And there always was bakeries. I mean, this is just part of an Israeli... what they like.
The number of restaurants we went to where they were picking vegetables from right around the restaurant to use in their sauté pans was fantastic. You know, I mean, you can't imagine. It come from the ground that morning, you know.
What inspired you to do this project?
Well, when you begin reading the White Book, which is Solutions
from the Land.
That's
one of the many books that's in this treasure box.
Yeah, that's one of the many.
It's called Solutions from the Land.
From the Land. You'll see that it had to do with wine. They got me to taste the Carmel wine, and I had been adverse to it because it was awful for the longest time. And they said, no, it's wonderful now. And because it was Adam Montefiore, and he did the same thing to me in the Golan Heights when it changed. And so I tried it, and he was right. It had changed. And so I did Carmel, and it has changed. It is wonderful. Mm.
And I think
Fred's wonderful.
You're going to have a big conversation. I think Fred's going to be delighted to hear this, because he's got a whole discussion on Israeli wines are not the sickly sweet grape.
That's not over with. Not Manischewitz.
You're talking about the square bottle. On that note, we're going to take a short break. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Lynn Arison and Diana Stahl about their book, The Desert and the Cities Sing, Discovering Today's Israel. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. And we're talking with Lynn Arison and Diana Stahl about their book, The Desert and the Cities Sing, Discovering Today's Israel. And they've been giving us a look at Israel's food, the agriculture, and the culture, and a whole look of Israel beyond the headlines, something else. But you have another... I think there's a special deal going on about this book at the moment. What is it?
Yeah, I should mention, if you order the book from Chronicle Books, which is... chroniclebooks.com, they're offering the book at 35% discount plus free shipping if you order before December 8th.
So it's a great present. And let me tell you something, that shipping is worth it, because this thing weighs 7 pounds. So the free shipping is worth it. So that's terrific. But right now, it's dinner in minutes time. So we'll have a quick dinner in minutes. And this is for this busy time of year. It's a tuna noodle skillet pie. And it's another one-pot meal. A couple of weeks ago, we had a one-pot meal. And in this one, Bonnie, you asked me last time about this. The linguine is made in the same pot with the ingredients.
Yes.
So you don't need to have another pot to wash, to boil the pasta. It's a 15-minute meal. And by using frozen chopped onions and frozen green bell pepper and then sliced mushrooms, all found in the rest in the market, it cuts down on your preparation time. So you can just put it all together and it cooks quite easily. You add some canned white meat tuna in packed in water and a little pasta sauce. So easy, family friendly, and that complete recipe is on my website. That's dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, it turns out that Israelis, or at least their ancestors, have been making wine for a really long time. By comparison, California's been making wine since about 1760, when wandering Spanish priests planted grapes for sacramental purposes. And France's wine history dates back to Roman times. But for Israel, the wine voyage began when, shortly after the Great Flood, the Bible's Old Testament says Noah planted a vineyard, becoming the world's first recorded viticulturalist.
So Noah was.
Noah was, yeah.
That's good to know. Okay.
Chateau Noah. Sounds good.
All right.
Chateau Noah.
The modern era of Israeli wine began in 1882 when Baron Edmund de Rothschild, owner of the famous French wine estate Chateau Lafite Rothschild, commissioned a study of agricultural possibilities that resulted in the first founding of the Carmel Winery that Lynn mentioned in 1890. And for decades, this was the area's only winery, only a major one anyway. But when the modern state of Israel was founded in 1948, the country still had only 14 wineries. But then waves of European arriving immigrants brought their love of wine with them. As Lynn said, they brought their love of food, and the industry began to grow. Now, even then, many of the grapes were rustic, making wines that were not very good, as Lynn pointed out. And in truth, a lot of Israel, especially down by the Mediterranean Sea, was too hot for European-style grapes. Then two events revolutionized Israel's wine industry. The first was the 1967 Six-Day War that put the Golan Heights under Israel control, including the southern slopes of snow-capped Mount Hermon, plenty cool. So finally, Israel could plant grapes in areas cool enough to grow top-quality grapes. And then America, the second thing that happened is American professors from the famous wine school at University of California's Davis campus came to lend their expertise, and Israel's winemakers started going abroad to America and France, Australia, and other countries to study wine. So by the 1990s, Israeli wines were winning gold medals in international wine competitions. And today, Israel has hundreds of wineries, big and small, making white, rosé, red, dessert wines, anything you can mention. And the Golan Heights Winery has three wine brands, Yarden, Gamla, and Golan, that are known and respected worldwide. So today, you can go to almost any major wine shop and find good quality wines from Israel.
Wow. And Lynn, Fred, I want you to know that Lynn has brought me some wine. Tell Fred the new wine.
Oh, what you got?
Oh. Yeah. Tell us about it.
We have a white wine that Castel has just come out with, and it's in the bag waiting for you.
For me, Fred.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
I'll drive down tomorrow.
Oh, what have I done?
Linda, are you sharing?
No.
There's a lot in there.
All right, there's enough for you.
I brought for everybody.
Okay, she brought for everybody. You're lucky, Bonnie.
But the white wine, La Vie, is so delicious. I couldn't believe it. And it's just come out. People don't know about it yet. And you can be the first.
And we can be the first to taste it. Fred, I'll let you know what it's like.
Okay. Send me a scratch and sniff.
Okay. All right. All right. So let's go back to this amazing treasure box that we've been talking about that has four books. And actually, it's more than four books in there. There's four little books.
Four little books. And then there's four DVDs.
And one of them is a film that you made.
Strangers No More.
And what is that?
That's about a school, Bialik Rogozin, where I poked my head in, and there were kids of all colors, and they were loving each other. And
this is in Israel?
In Israel,
yeah.
In Tel Aviv, in the south part of Tel Aviv. And I couldn't believe it. I thought, what is this? This is something unbelievable. And so what happened is I had my filmmakers come. I told them I may be hallucinating, but I think there's a story here, and it won an Academy Award.
Fantastic. Wow. Fantastic.
And the name of it again?
It's called Strangers No More, and there's the most adorable children that...
Of all religions, of all colors, whatever.
Whatever. Yes. But they love each other, and that's what is... They can't understand why the adults can't do the same.
It's a great example of letting children do what they do naturally, which is behave like humans and tolerate one another and play with one another. It's right. It's terrific.
And you wanted to mention something else in the book about peace.
Yes. Well, in fact, you know, we the whole beyond the headlines idea, we went over looking for things that were excellent and moving forward in Israel. And one of the things that came as a little surprise to me as a newcomer to Israel was the number of people who are working toward peace there with Israel's neighbors. So it was great, and a lot of that is featured in our box. Arabs and Jews working together to build something that will work in the future.
Fantastic. And then also in this little treasure box, I keep finding little things in here. It's amazing. Is a thumb drive. And in this thumb drive is all the innovations that have happened. And it's animated. I thought it was for children, but Lynn says it's for adults, too.
It's for adults like me.
It's fun for everyone. It was a blast to put that together. We realized there was so much information. How could we make this fun and interesting for people? And we thought, well, let's invent a six-year-old girl and let her be absorbing all of this information about what Israel has invented and created.
Well, I'd love for children to see this as well as adults. But back to food. I didn't know. I mean, we may have heard of Israeli couscous. It's the large kernels, pearls of couscous rather than the small one. But it didn't occur to me that it was invented in Israel. Of course, it would be because it's got its name in it. But you also mentioned to me that a thumb drive was invented in Israel.
Yes. In fact, that's what we originally thought. We should include a thumb drive. It was made in Israel. And then we thought, well, let's pile more information on that thumb drive. That's sort of how
that
came about.
And something about cherry tomatoes on there? What is that?
Also an Israeli invention, in fact. Yeah,
You're talking about the little cherry tomatoes we have in the market?
Exactly.
They were invented in Israel.
Yes.
All right, it's incredible that that's happening, and other things. I mean, I didn't know that Waze. If you driving around and you're using Waze in your car to find out what the traffic
that was
like,
invented in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Waze
was invented.
We had Waze on the program. Remember, Joe?
Yeah.
We just visited the offices in Tel Aviv last week. Actually, yeah.
They're working with cities now, actually.
Yes,
to help, you know, the congestion.
Right, right. Oh, I don't know what I would do without Waze.
Yeah.
Exactly. So much in this wonderful book. And there's a 35% discount if you order it from Chronicle Books before December 8th. Make a great present. We could talk so much more, but we're out of time. Very interesting week. Lynn Arison and Diana Stahl, thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Linda, for having us, and this has been fun.
It's fun. The book is The Desert and the Cities Sing, Discovering Today's Israel. Remarkable look at the changing and developing nation. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joe and Bonnie, nice to be with you.
Likewise. And thank you again for the book.
Right. Well, next week, it's my annual Kitchen Gadget Gift List. You're going to find out what's new in the kitchens this year, and many of them are under $20. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for tuning in today. Our lead producer, Richard Ives. Technical direction from online coordinator, Jason Zepka. Polly Landis is associate producer. Tomorrow at 1, it's Here and Now. Monday, we return with a program about solar energy in Florida. The solar election item votes both went the way consumer solar advocates preferred. So what's now the lay of the land concerning solar energy? We'll have experts on hand and take your calls. And don't forget about our free audio archives for download from our website. That's WLRN.org. There's also a Topical Currents Facebook page as well as an iTunes podcast of each edition. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.